There is an endless sea of podcasts about entrepreneurship. Talking about it, but not living it. We live it every day. This is Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel, talking about real estate investing, but also encompassing general subjects in regards to owning small to medium-sized businesses, and of course, all the struggles that business owners must overcome to be successful. This is Inside the Wolf's Den, and this is Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel.
Welcome back to Inside the Wolf's Den with your host, Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel. Today we actually have a special guest, Daryl Dyke. He is the founder and CEO for Noble Mortgage and Investments, LLC. Noble Mortgage is a direct private lender that lends primarily to investors in the major Texas markets. An expert in real estate finance, Dyke spends his time leading the company by maintaining the fun Noble culture with his team and providing the vision for the company. He enjoys educating investors and is a regular speaker in several real estate groups, radio shows, and podcasts. Dyke has always maintained the high standards of ethics and diligence with his investors, borrowers, which has played a huge part in making Noble the most respected lender in Texas. Dyke also maintains a successful rental portfolio in Houston. He also has bought, renovated, and resold numerous properties since 1995 using his own capital in various lines of credit with bank institutions. Dyke prides himself on being very active in all aspects of Noble Mortgage and enjoys his career in real estate lending. So welcome, Daryl. Thank you so much for being with us today. I'm excited for our listeners to get to know you a little more. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Thanks for having me, guys. Always a pleasure to see you, too. I own a mortgage company, Noble Mortgage and Investments. Pretty much all I've ever done is the mortgage side. I got into the mortgage business right out of college almost as a loan officer and just, really took to it. Just kind of came natural to me. I like to say, not to be in a cocky way, but I say I felt like Mozart on the piano. They put me in front of the piano and I just knew how to play. Nice. I knew how to lend. I don't know why. I mean, within like 3 months, I was like top loan officer at this company I was working for. So I worked there for 3-4 years and then worked at another company for a couple years and then eventually started Noble Mortgage in 2003. And we specialize in doing hard money lending, working with investors to help them buy properties that are dilapidated or need to be renovated. We do new construction, things like that as well, but mostly on the investor side. But unlike a lot of other hard money lenders, we also do long-term lending for a conventional basis as well as commercial loans. So that's on the business side. And then just as far as the personal side, I'm a father of two boys and absolutely adore them and love to hunt. You can probably see one of my deers up here in the background.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so we've seen some pictures to prove it too. So
yeah. Do you know, I've never been
getting investors. I've always had an abundance mentality when it comes to that sort of thing. I love doing free seminars and webinars and educating investors and just helping people get their feet wet in real estate.
Yeah, this is probably something I shouldn't put on air, but or out there, but yeah, I've never gone hunting before, so And it's hunting, right? Not hunting, but So someday you have to teach me.
I'd love to take you. I didn't. I grew up in Texas, and most people that hunt, they grew up hunting with their dads and so forth. And I didn't hunt until I was 40 years old, and I'm 50 now. I just kind of went on a whim with some buddies for my birthday, and we went dove hunting. And man, I got the bug. And anytime from September 1st through the end of April, I go out as many times as I can. I find a lot of different things. I just love the outdoors and the experience of it. So it's a lot of fun.
That's awesome.
Well, you definitely show that you work hard and you also play hard as well. So a balance of the two.
Yes.
Yeah, that's awesome. So tell me, in your bio, there was some info about keeping a fun, noble culture. I like how you guys said that. So tell me, what do you guys do in your company that keeps it fun? I've known a lot of your staff that works for you over the years, and several of them have been there a really long time. So what do you do to maintain and keep that culture and provide that for your staff?
Yeah, when I first started my company, I really didn't understand or have any idea what a culture was. So I just kind of hired people that I thought would do well at their jobs. And in 2008, 2009, you know, we went from a staff of 15 people to about 2 people because the whole market just completely crashed. And so when I started ramping up again, I hired a business coach. And the business coach really taught me a lot about all aspects of the business. But one of the things that he always talked about was culture. And so, you know, I'm a very fun guy to be around. I'm very loose. I'm not an uptight person. So I decided to start hiring people, number one, that I thought would be fun to be around, that would I enjoy seeing on a day-to-day basis. Because I always tell my employees, you know, we see each other more than we see our family.
Right.
And so I'm like, if you hire someone who just is just, you know, hard to get along with, it just makes the whole day, you know, life miserable. So I always interview people, and I have 3 or 4 people from my office interviewing to make sure they fit, because we're very loose and we joke a lot and we make fun of each other and all that, can play pranks on each other, all this kind of stuff. You know, that's what makes the day fine. And we work hard too, but so I've created this culture. I'm very proud of it. And my employees like really genuinely enjoy working here. And so we really protect that culture. Whenever we hire someone, I'm like, I want as many people as possible to talk to them to make sure that they like them and they're going to fit before we even get into how well they'll do at their job.
Awesome. And to do that too, how do you hold them, I guess, with having that fun culture and people you really like to be around, how do you hold them accountable though at the same time? I'm asking for myself personally, but yeah, because I think sometimes I've made hires over the past that people I like to be around, but at the same time, then sometimes I have a trouble holding them accountable to their job. And maybe I'm still hiring the wrong people. I don't know.
But yeah, I mean, on the culture side, you know, I don't do drama. I tell my employees, there's no drama up here. You have a problem with somebody, let's all talk about it and we'll figure out a solution. And if we can't, then that doesn't work. So I'm very, very, I stay in touch with my employees. And if there's anything bothering them, I feel like they feel that it's okay to come talk to me about it. And so they have done that. And, you know, not to say that we haven't hired people that have been difficult to deal with. As a matter of fact, I hired an accountant a couple of years ago, and, you know, in 2 days she had annoyed 3 different people. And I let her go after 2 days. I'm like, I'm not doing this. I mean, you just started and you got 3 people angry at you already. So that's, to me, I hire quickly, fire slowly. I mean, fire quickly, hire slowly type of thing, you know?
Right. Awesome. Yeah. It also goes back to your core values. You know, if you have a set of core values for your company, you live by those core values. Your employees live by those core values.
Yeah, absolutely. And we like to say, we want you to drink the Noble Mortgage Kool-Aid, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that. I love that. That's cool.
You want to be here? I don't want you here, you know? And someone doesn't want to be here, and I can tell, I'm doing them a favor by firing them, because the longer I wait to fire them, the longer it takes them to find the job that maybe they will like.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Are you lending just in Texas, or do you do other markets as well?
We're only in Texas right now. We have an office in Houston. That's our corporate office. We also have an office in Dallas. We have our eyes on San Antonio right now for a third office. And so on the hard money side, we really try to stick to the major metropolitan cities of Houston, Dallas, Austin, and San Antonio. Conventionally, we can lend anywhere, but right now just Texas.
Awesome. Well, and if you would go into explain more hard money, because I know some of our listeners are new to this, you know, and they probably don't know necessarily what hard money lending is. So if you can explain that.
Sure. Yeah. A lot of people have misconceptions about what hard money is. And, you know, when I first started in the industry, hard money was really what they call an asset-based loan, where they strictly look at the asset. They'll make you a loan based on what that property is worth right now. Typically 50 to 65 cents on the dollar. And, you know, it didn't matter about credit, didn't matter about income, anything like that. Well, that's changed over the years. Now I like to say it's more of a value-based loan, because most of the loans that we do, you have someone that's buying a property under market value. They're going to update it or add on to it or whatever. And at the end of the day, it's going to be worth a lot more money than what they pay for it. So a hard money lender is going to get an appraisal that tells us not what the property is worth now, but what will it be worth whenever the work is completed. So we will lend as much as 75% of the completed value. So what that does to an investor is it enables them to leverage themselves. So we could easily do 100% financing on a transaction if they buy it right. You know, if they're buying it for $50,000, it needs $20,000 in repairs, and it'll appraise for $100,000 after repairs. So I'll lend up to $75,000 on that $100,000 value. They get 100% financing. That's the biggest reason people use hard money, is for the leverage and the speed, of course, because we can close a loan in just a few days.
Right.
And what kind of, like, what about them as a borrower? you know, what kind of qualifications would they need to meet to do that?
Well, we always start off with what are they going to do with the property, what we call their exit strategy. So if they're flipping the property, they're going to resell it. The only thing we really look at is want to make sure they have a little bit of money in the bank to make payment and get the contractor started. And then also we pull credit. It's not a credit-based loan, but we like to know who we're lending to. If they have less than perfect credit, we might lower the loan to value a little bit. But if they're going to keep the property as a rental property, then now that tells me I'm going to get paid off by them obtaining another loan. So now I have to look at it from a banker's perspective or a conventional lender's perspective. So we look at everything, income, tax returns, everything. So I want to make sure once the repairs are completed, they have the ability to refinance it out into a long-term loan, which we provide those as well. So we know what it takes to qualify for.
Yeah, that's a good segue into that. Because I mean, we're, you know, obviously the bulk of our business is rentals and property management is our main business. And so, you know, building long-term wealth, we believe is through real estate is a good mechanism for retirement and wealth building. So, you know, and a good strategy is the, you know, the Burr method or, you know, the buy, rent, repeat, rinse, whatever, you know, they redo again. But yeah,
wait, say renovate. That again?
Yeah, but the, so, I mean, that's something that I think your company does a lot of with clients. Correct me if I'm wrong or miss.
Oh yeah, we do a ton of those loans. I absolutely love doing those loans because, you know, number one, you got a high qualified borrower. You're talking to someone who's very bankable, you know, but they come to us because they're buying a property under market value that they're going to add value to it. And so they can leverage themselves. You know, they're not always going to get 100% financing. If they don't buy it cheap enough, they may not, but they're going to get a lot better financing as far as leverage is concerned than if they go to a bank where a bank would want them to put down a minimum of 20% of costs.
Right.
So if you're dealing with limited capital, you know, you can only buy so many houses with putting 20% everything in the deal.
Yeah. And it's starting off, I mean, Sean and I, we used hard money, you know, at the very beginning, and we were able to leverage ourselves. I mean,
yeah, it's how we
got started.
And funded and it was a good source of I mean, if we didn't have the money or if we had, you know, 10 or 15 homes going at one time, we might not have had all the funds for all those. So hard money definitely played a big role in that. But yeah, and I think, like you said, if people are limited, maybe on they're great credit borrowers, they maybe have good W-2 income and they're doing on a side hustle, just buying rental properties. I think the Burr method where they can, you know, buy it at a decent discount, but then, you know, fix it up, refinance it, and then take that money that they just put into that property and go buy another one. So I think
it's a no-brainer. It's a no-brainer deal. If you want to build a rental portfolio, again, you're dealing with limited capital. It's the way to go because you can leverage yourself so well and build a rental portfolio really, really quickly. You know, you get 75% of after repaired value on the first loan and the second loan. So there's two loans there that you have to qualify for. But you're in that hard money loan because the hard money loan is a little bit more expensive than a conventional loan. However, you're in that loan typically only 60 to 90 days. So you buy it, you fix it. As soon as the repairs are done, you immediately refinance into a long-term loan. So you can just sit there and churn them over and over.
Yeah. And if you're good enough on acquisitions, you probably can get in, you know, you can get all your money back out of the house and be into the home, really no money down, so to speak, as people say. But if you're great at acquisitions, what is in those scenarios, are they able to use the same, if they used you for that scenario where you could handle both sides of it, are they able to use that same appraisal or will you have to get a new appraisal? Does it save any cost that way? Or
now you do have to get a new appraisal because you are getting a new loan from a different lender. So you know, it is a higher cost there. You have to pay for two appraisals and two sets of closing costs. The second loan is closing cost is a lot less than the first one. But there are certain credits you get, like you get a 50% credit on your title policy. You also get your survey can carry over. So you do get some of those credits on the second loan.
Okay. And the draw schedule, do you guys retain, on the hard money side, do you retain the rehab costs in escrow and then do it in draws? Or is that how you guys work?
Yeah, exactly. So if the property has a renovation aspect to it, we're going to hold that money back in escrow and then distribute it in draws as the work is completed.
Awesome.
And for those that are listening, I mean, we talk a lot about, you know, who to have on your real estate team and the hard money lender, the lender, you know, that's definitely somebody that you need on your team. So Daryl has actually been well-respected in Texas, and we've actually had clients work with Daryl. So,
if you're in the Texas market, I think reach out to him. See what he can do for you. What's the best way? We've got some other questions, but what's the best way to get a hold of him, just so we can put that in the show notes? And
sure. They can go to our website. We have a pretty nifty website, which is noblemortgage.com, or they can call our office at 713-680-8100. They can also send me an email. We created an email during COVID just for a lot of questions. It's askdarel, D-A-R-E-L, at noblemortgage.com.
Cool.
Perfect.
What some other questions that we ask all our guests on the show, what habits have you created either in business or in your personal life that has led to your success?
You know, one of the biggest things I did that helped me a lot was hiring the business coach. In 2000, I think it was 2010 or 2011, you know, because when you start a business, you know, I was 100% commissioned loan officer. So my thought process was, well, I'm 100% commissioned anyway. I'll just do it myself. And so I started a company without really understanding that that's nothing like being 100% commissioned loan officer. I mean, that's just one thing you have to worry about is sales. So you have to learn a lot of different aspects of running a business. You have the marketing department, you have finance, you know, you have HR, you have all these different things. So one of the biggest things I learned from my business coach was how to delegate, because before then I did everything. Like I was Mr. Right? So it took the real complex, right? Yeah. I did all my marketing. I serviced all the loans. I did all the accounting. I was looking at every house. I literally did. There was nothing that I didn't touch in this office. And my business coach was like, what are you doing? Why are you doing your accounting? And I was like, because I'm good at it. Why wouldn't
so
I?
You thought.
Yeah, right. I mean, why are you doing this? Because I'm good at that too. I mean, you know, because you can do everything better as a business owner because you're so much dialed into it. So I learned to delegate. That was the biggest thing that I learned to do, and just hiring the right people and training them. And you still keep your eye on the ball, obviously, but learning how to delegate was one of the biggest lessons I learned from running a business.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, there's a funny story on that. I don't know what we were doing. We created, all our departments had to create a video on how to, what was it?
Maximizing operational performance. Yeah. And so we came up with a theme. I think it was like MOP.
Yeah.
And each department had to do a video in one of the videos.
There's like a rap song out there, something called MOPs. Anyway, it's a weird video, but
they basically wanted to mop Sean out because he was the bottleneck of the business.
Yeah. So I had the same problem.
So. Yeah. I mean, it's normal. Every entrepreneur goes through.
No, delegation is hard. I mean, yeah. I mean, as a business owner, you want to be the one to, you know, do everything, but
yeah,
there's only so much you can do.
Yeah. I mean, so, I learned to do that. And now like I'm an expert at it. As soon as there's something to do, my first thought is, who can I get to do this?
Yeah, there's actually a good book. What is it?
Who Not How by
Dan Sullivan.
Dan Sullivan. It's
good. If you haven't read it, it's good.
Yeah, oh,
it's
really? A
new book. Who Not How.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's all focused on the who, like you finding the who rather than trying to figure out the how. So
yeah,
it's an awesome book. Yeah.
Yeah. It took me a while to do that, because I remember right when I had gone through that exercise with my business coach, I have my realtor's license too. So I had a rental house, had gone vacant. I drove out there. I was putting the sign in and I was like
renting it yourself.
Yeah. And I had an epiphany. I was like, what am I doing? I just need to hire a realtor to do that, who's going to be probably better at it than me. And I can free up my time to focus on my business. So that's really when it hit me, was when I was hammering that sign in my little rental house.
Right. That's funny.
Yeah. That's awesome. Hey, what, you had mentioned you went from a larger staff to a smaller staff in the last recession. You know, I've been preparing for the last couple of years for a recession, thinking it was going to happen. And really, you know, we were watching like cash balances and not being overextended, and just really, you know, thinking what could happen next. And it doesn't look like it's going to happen again this year or probably even next year. But, and I thought when COVID hit, I thought we were going to get, hit with something, but, it doesn't look like it yet. But in the real estate space, what did you learn from 7 and 8 that maybe the listeners can learn from? You know, at some point we're going to go through another recession, you know, and a market correction. So what did you learn? What was the biggest takeaways that you took from that?
You know, I had to get, when the recession hit, you know, we really didn't, I don't get a lot of foreclosures. A lot of people think hard money lenders get a lot of foreclosures. I get between zero and two a year. And so when the recession hit, I mean, I was juggling 10, 20, 30 houses at a time that were being foreclosed on. So I really had to learn how to think creatively, number one. But, you know, I really spent some time going through our expenses and just kind of cut the fat on things that we didn't need. You know, and one thing I always learned is cash is king. Always, you know, always be prepared for that rainy day, because, you know, when it happens, you don't expect it. And you have to have some money to get you through those lean times.
Absolutely.
But probably the biggest lesson that I know now that I didn't realize at the time was I should have been buying real estate.
Yeah. We say that all the time.
Every one of those foreclosures I would have kept. I should have sold. And I kept about 15 of them, and I ended up selling them eventually. But yeah, I mean, the people that were buying back then made a killing.
Right.
Yeah. I remember, so we got into the turnkey space in 2010. And at that time in spring, you know, you're familiar with this area really well. You know, we were buying houses for 35 to 40,000 in spring. Mm-hmm. And
I wish we'd have bought more.
And I was nervous. I was nervous to put a tenant in there and sell it as a turnkey. I'm like, well, is somebody going to buy this? And, you know, I was selling them for like 65 to 85,000.
We're like, what's
000.
The worst case? It'll be our rental, you know?
But I wish I would have just bought hundreds at that time. And I could have at that time.
Yeah. Like I wish I would have kept all my foreclosures. And, you know, quite frankly, the foreclosures that I kept, I didn't have a choice. I was upside down on them. And I was, you know what? I either rented them or owner financed them. I did any and everything just to get cash coming in. So, you know, that's the great thing about real estate is if you know, if you don't get the price you want, just wait.
Right.
Time usually can heal it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
If you are just starting out, because I know you got a lot of experience in obviously lending, but also in buying and selling and renting houses. If you had a listener that was just starting out, what advice would you give him, or for your son? You know, I know you have one in college and one in high school, correct?
Yeah, freshman at A&M, another one was sophomore in high school. You know, I would say for someone first starting out is to educate themselves. There's so much free education available online. You had mentioned the Burr strategy. That's from Bigger Pockets, obviously. So much free education on that website in general. So you really have to educate yourself, because there's a lot to learn in real estate, and then figure out exactly what you want to do based on your financial standing. You know, if you don't have a lot of money, well, you know, may not be able to buy property initially, but maybe you can joint venture or partner with somebody or bird dog, or, you know, there's a lot of different things you can do in real estate. We need to figure out what you want to do after you get educated. And once you get educated, you'll figure out based on your financial standing what you're capable of at that time.
That's awesome. Yeah, I appreciate that. And any good books or podcasts you're listening to right now that you'd recommend?
You know, I just started reading on my son's suggestion, the book Can't Hurt Me, which is a story about, do you know that story?
Yeah, so we read as a team, I did read Can't Hurt Me, but Jesse Itzler's Living with a Seal.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
What's it called?
Living with a Seal.
Okay. No.
So it's the Can't Hurt Me is David Goggins, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So he Jesse Itzler is he founded
the Navy SEAL guy or
no. He's married to the lady that owns Spanx. He founded like some jet marquee that he sold to Warren Buffett, and he's done well. Zinc Water he sold to Coca-Cola or something like that. But anyways, he invited David Goggins to live with him for 30 days.
Oh, wow.
And so he documents the whole experience of living with him for 30 days. And he met him in a 50 or 100 mile race. Mm-hmm. And they were doing it in teams. Jesse and had like three other guys running with him. And David was running the whole thing by himself.
Yeah.
And he saw him running with a broken foot. And David just wrapped his foot in tape and just kept running. And he's like, I got to meet this guy. Yeah. And I got to get to know him. And so that's why he invited him to live with him. And it's a whole story. It's an awesome book after you read Can't Hurt Me. But yeah, so there's a funny story. So we read that as an organization, our whole team. And then for Christmas, it was right before Christmas. And so one year they gave me
the boot camp,
SEAL boot camp or whatever. It's like a conditioning course or whatever, and it was in Memorial Park. And so it was at 5 o'clock every morning. So I had to drive all the way down there, and it's in the winter. And so and it doesn't get that cold here, but there was a couple mornings like it got freezing. And I remember one day they, one morning, so to cut the story real short, every day, like I showed up and some people would bring their yoga mats and stuff, cause we're on the concrete in the parking lots doing push-ups and, you know, sit-ups and all stuff. So people would bring like a mat. So, cause you're on the concrete. And so like, I didn't realize that the next week was actually, you're working a whole entire week. It's hell camp or hell, whatever.
Help. And the actual Navy SEALs are, leading that camp.
And so like, I'm like, it was the one morning I kind of was half awake. I got my yoga mat. I got everything over and I'm getting out. And some guy just starts yelling at me, just cussing at me when I'm getting out of the truck. I'm like, is he talking to me? He can't see anything. It's pure dark. It's 5 o'clock in the morning and he's screaming at me. And I'm like, everything's falling out of my truck and I'm getting nervous. And then so I run over there and then he's like, everybody's there doing push-ups. And then he sees my yoga mat. And I was like, oh. And then right away he just laid into me.
This beep.
This beep, beep, beep with his yoga mat and just screaming in my face. I'm like, what did I get? What did I sign? I didn't even sign up for this. Like, why am I doing this? You know,
That's my 30s. Yeah, my son loved all that. You know, he's in the Corps at A&M. So
that's right. Yeah. Yes.
And he wants to pursue a career in the Army. So he does, on top of the Corps stuff, he does a lot of stuff with the actual Army. And they take him out in the middle of the woods and they drop him off and they sleep on the ground and they have to run patrols. And he's getting ready to do it next week.
Wow.
He's praying.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Pray for him.
Yeah. Day one.
My knees were bleeding after that week. And Joni laughed because I came to the office and I was so disoriented. I had different colored shoes on. I was a mess that week.
We're too old for that stuff, Sean.
No, yeah, exactly. So.
So one last question, Daryl. So I know you actually have a big event coming up, the forecast panel. Why don't you talk a little bit about that? Maybe how our listeners can sign up for that event.
Yeah, so if you go to our website, noblemortgage.com, and you click on events, you can register for it there. But this is a big event that we've done every year for the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, January, where we bring people from the industry. Of course, Joni, you're going to be on there.
Yes, very excited to be on.
Yeah, and so we kind of just bring some experts in the field. You know, we're a very niche industry, real estate investment on the residential side, and get different opinions from everybody that's in that aspect of the business and what they think, you know, the year is going to be like. So we have Jason Bible, Steve Rosenberg, Matt Trenchard's going to be there, a whole schedule, and of course you, and just kind of talk about the year and what to expect. And you know, normally we do an in-person event. In the past, we've had 500-600 people at that event. This year.
Right. I was there last year. It was pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was really good. But this year we're doing it much smaller scale. We'll probably only have about maybe 30 or 40 people at the event, but we're going to do it as a webinar, so I bet we'll get a good turnout. So I'm interested to see everybody's take on it, because obviously nobody's take on last year with COVID-19 hitting, you know, changed everything. So it's going to be interesting how everybody has a different
everybody did
expect.
Did you film it and do a webinar last time, or was it only live?
It was live.
Yeah, it was only live last year, and then
that's cool. I think maybe you might even reach more people.
Yes.
Yeah, you might be able to reach more now that you are going and recording and doing
it. Yeah, I'm interested to see. I love live events. That's one of the things I miss about since, you know, before the pandemic, because we loved doing happy hours and our educational events. All that was always live. And I enjoy that because I'm a very people person. So we just got to scale that down. So it should be a good event though, otherwise.
Awesome. Do you still do your like happy hour event, or is that been put on? Yeah, I remember you used to do a happy hour event.
Yeah, we didn't do any last year because of COVID. We ended up canceling all of them. I haven't set anything up for this year. Obviously, January we have our big event. We'll see. You know, typically we do them like every other month, so we'll see. Maybe in March, hopefully, if everything cools off and we're able to do an event. So I don't know. I'm afraid to book anything because, you know, last year we. Yeah.
So cool. Well, thank you for taking the time. I know it's a busy time of the year. The year is just getting started, so we appreciate you being on and sharing. Anybody, if you need hard money or lending, please reach out to Daryl Dyke at Noble Mortgage. You're in good hands.
Yeah. And if you want to sign up for the event coming up, do so. So
where can they sign up? Oh, your website.
Go to the website, noblemortgage.com, and click on events and you can register right there. It's a free webinar, so it should be good. We have a really good panel this year.
Awesome. Well, thanks again. And, everybody, just tune in next week. We're going to have another guest, and have a great week.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Daryl.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkle. Tons of entrepreneurial podcasts are out there talking.
Talking.
But Joni and Sean are living it every single day. Their portfolio now includes many franchises and medium-sized businesses. We talk about the trials and motivators of successfully running a business. Join us again soon for another podcast. But until then, reach out on the website at InsideTheWolf'sDen.com, on Facebook at Inside the Wolf's Den, on Instagram at Inside the Wolf Den. We'll see you again soon. This is Inside the Wolf's Den. We'll see you next time.